It's Thursday, November 6, 2014, and you're listening to episode 356 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 50 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
My name is still Pat.
Yeah.
I'm pulling the Wayne this week. I've never done it before.
Oh, is it Wayne that normally does that?
Yeah, it is. Okay. Yeah.
Still Wayne.
Yeah. Still Wayne.
So, okay, yeah, for anyone who doesn't recall or is new to the show, anytime we have to retape the intro to the show multiple times, Wayne always says, this is still Wayne instead of this is Wayne.
And he didn't do it this time.
No, well, it's the wrong protocol. We had technical problems. That's all it was.
I only do it when we recut because we sucked.
We sucked, yeah.
No,
yeah.
We didn't have technical problems. We had metaphysical problems. The mic does not always recognize Wayne's voice as a thing. It's like, it can sense. There's just this soulless space where Wayne is sitting, you know, the void of Ginger. And it doesn't get anything.
It's just
in awe of me.
Yeah. Like,
it can't pick it up because it's...
Like, if we had one of those ghost hunting cams and we were to, like, run it past you, it would show all kinds of ghosts and whatever in this room. And Wayne would just be like, just complete darkness. Nothing. I mean, there's no energy there whatsoever. And, you know, ghosts might even herself and fall into him and cease to exist. Or
wow.
Yeah. That's why I keep my soul in my body. Don't ever run your soul through a ginger. My grandma did that. She's gone. She's in a place even God can't find her. All right.
Just got dark really quick.
Yeah, it did. I'm about to go into a Christmas charity.
So let's segue into helping people.
Yeah, I feel like Casey Kasem in that clip where he's cussing because he's trying to segue between, was it a death dedication?
Yeah.
You mean Casey Kasem is still not buried?
What?
Oh.
He's not buried yet.
Oh, they're fighting over his body.
They're fighting over his body. He has not been put in the ground yet.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
People are...
I think he's not in the ground yet because he's still alive.
I think that's probably it. I think
it's like a Walt Disney thing. Yeah, they... I don't know. Anyway. All right, so
Christmas... that got dark,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that did get dark. Man. So, fine. Back to our Christmas charity drive. Jesus. So, there's an inter-podcast charity contest, okay? So, there are a couple podcasts that are involved, and I think one individual. And we all have a charity that's set up side by side. These are different charities. It's through a multi-charity site called Razu. And on there, each of us is allowed to pick a charity and then to raise funds for that charity. Obviously, whoever raises the most money is the best podcast and has the biggest penis, right?
Yes.
That's what charity...
So that's going to be us.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, totally.
Now, what we need you guys to do... In all seriousness, I mean, this is an important cause. Yeah. The charity that we picked is the American...
Yeah, REPN is, in fact, an important cause.
Yeah, it is. It's going places that people really care about.
Yeah.
But we chose the American Heart Association.
Yes.
Because, first of all, it is the number one killer of both males and females, is heart disease. And secondly, the charity gets the gold standard in terms of the amount of money put into its actual work as opposed to put into its administration. This is not something that just takes a huge amount off the top and they've got, you know, all these executives living fat pocket lives and nothing actually goes to the charity. The American Heart Association donates a lot of their money. In fact, I'll see if I can get the exact breakdown for the show notes. But the point being, this is an important cause. If it has not already affected you, I guarantee you at some point in your life it will. It may even affect you personally.
Yeah.
And so I really hope that you guys, as we go through the holiday season, will take the time just to send a few bucks out that way, because these are people doing important research, finding ways to educate, to treat, to prevent new innovations for cures and such for a category of diseases that are the leading killer of human beings in the Western world.
Yep.
So this is bigger than, I mean, I know diseases like breast cancer and such get a lot more press, but you are more likely to die from this than anything, including the millions of you dying right now from Ebola.
So, kills more people than Ebola. It kills more people than war, than old age, than anything.
Yes, including Pat's alphabet soup of venereal diseases. I want to throw out a thanks. I got something in the mail just yesterday.
Was it a venereal disease?
No, it was not from Pat either. From Pat, I would not have opened that.
Ah.
But, no, actually, I got a package. Actually, package here, right there. It's off the top of those envelopes right there. Nope, to the right. There. Perfect. But I got something here. I got a copy, an actual copy, not the stolen photocopies I had before, of The Hunters Hunted.
Ah.
The book that no one but me seems to think exists. Well, I know you guys do. So you played it with me.
I played it with you.
Yeah, you would not believe the number of people.
We probably bought it together.
Yeah, I don't even. You would not believe the number of people that when I've mentioned Hunters Hunted on the show have called me out because they think either it doesn't exist or I'm confused and I'm actually thinking of one of the other Hunter products like Hunter the Vigil or Hunter the Reckoning. Yes, I have had to email so many people links to this book to be like, no, there really is a book called The Hunters Hunted.
It's about playing vampire hunters in the Vampire the Masquerade.
It was the first supplement in that line.
Yeah.
The Reckoning and The Vigil came later. This was the original book about playing relatively normal humans killing the supernatural in the World of Darkness setting. And I love this book. And we did actually promise some mini episodes, probably 200, 300 episodes ago, that if there was ever a Hunters Hunted 2, we would review it. And there actually is now Hunters Hunted 2.
Oh,
so wow. I have to go pick it up and review it now. But in the meantime, I want to thank Thunderbelly, who is the individual that sent this to me, for sending me an actual copy of The Hunters Hunted. Because, first of all, I did not own a copy of it. I had some of the portions of the book illegally photocopied. But it's also nice simply to own it so that I can prove to people that, in fact, this book really does exist. And if you're listening to sound, don't
from
believe
1992.
Me. Just freaking Google it. Stop trying to tell me. I don't know what book I'm talking about. Well,
Dan, this book doesn't exist that I'm holding in my hands, flipping through right now. Actually, the art.
Back in the name of Shel Silverstein.
Oh, my God. He did a Shel Silverstein picture on me.
That's right. That's one of the actual powers you can get in there as a human is you can cast people out in the name of Shel Silverstein. You just hold up a picture of him, and vampires cannot come within, you know, so many meters of you based on the dice that you roll. So. And you get a lot of dice.
The art in this is actually pretty good. I mean, role-playing game books from this time, one of our hobbies...
Was making fun of the art.
It was making fun of the art.
Wasn't usually bad in the sense of it didn't look like what it was supposed to look like. It was always bad in the sense that it was nonsensical. Like, you'd have a picture, let's go like Battletech. You have a picture of a guy next to a mech. That was a pretty good drawing of a guy and a mech.
Mm-hmm.
But the picture made no narrative sense. There are always these really random elements in it. It's usually placed in a portion of the book that had nothing to do with what's in the picture. Yeah, so we used to make up these narratives to try and draw all the art together.
It does have this sort of 80s shadow punk vibe to some of the art, though. But, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, why is it that all of these role-playing games that came out in the early 90s that I've seen books of all seem to have 80s artwork?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I guess there's probably a reason for that, which is a lot of the people involved in the 90s run of RPGs came from or were motivated by the 80s boom of RPGs. But there's a boom-bust. Okay, so let's take this a little bit back. I guess this is an RPG topic, so... The role-playing game industry, like most industries, goes through cycles. But its cycles actually seem to be fairly severe. And I think this has a lot to do with the fact that people in the RPG industry are really hobbyists first, and businessmen and women second, third, maybe even 20th. And so a lot of things get done, a lot of decisions get made that are really done out of passion, as opposed to being done because they make good business sense. And if you look through the history of the hobby... There seems to be about a 10-year cycle that this runs on where you get these huge booms where the hobby just goes absolutely wild. And then it goes through a really horrific bust where people are losing their jobs. Companies are closing down. Folks go off to other industries and never come back. Properties get sold. Stuff changes hands. You hear all this drama later about people stabbing each other in the back and bills going unpaid. But you had a big boom in kind of the early to mid 80s, and then you had a bust, and then you had another big boom in the 90s. It was driven in large part by the advent of World of Darkness. I mean, that's not the only thing that was going on. There were other things in play. Battletech, for example, at the time was having a really good run and was in what I considered really to be the heyday of the IP.
It had only been sued a couple of times at that point.
I thought they won the early lawsuits, or at least got them pushed off or something.
Oh, no way.
Because they didn't lose those 14 mechs until
Well, I think
the
they
90s.
Just kept appealing. And well, there were problems in the Japanese end because there were people who were suing them who they didn't necessarily own the rights.
Yeah, because Harmony Gold didn't have all everything locked down.
It was a gigantic mess.
Yeah, I don't know. I won't claim to be an expert in all that.
So I'm kind of curious if you think right now that we're in a boom or a bust
phase. We are in a boom. I absolutely believe we're in a boom.
If I look at the industry right now, I look at just how easy it is to get books. When I first came on this podcast, I couldn't find a book in a store that wasn't a specialty store.
Right.
If I go into a Barnes & Noble now, they have sections of role-playing game books.
Yeah, and you know, people may disagree with me on this, but what I attribute the boom to is a couple things. One is the fact that I think a lot of these back pocket indie games really made it into the mainstream thinking of gamers. And much like World of Darkness did, have brought in gamers that may not have otherwise played. You can look at things like Fate. You can look at things like Inspectors. I'm not saying these things are like huge multi-billion dollar products, but my point is these are not, oh, all you can do is download and print off a PDF type stuff anymore. They've made it much further towards the forefront. And on top of that, Pathfinder's continued to gain momentum. D&D 5th edition is getting very positive reviews. I think all that's contributing to it.
Well, and also just the technology in general. You look at sites like DriveThruRPG.
But we are unquestionably coming off of a bust. I mean, while I believe right now we are in the early parts of a boom, we're coming off of a bust, which occurred in the wake of the D20 boom, which is the most recent boom in the industry. When D20 hit, holy crap. I mean, just Chad, you remember this, I'm sure, from the early days of Fear of the Books. I mean, good God, this podcast is approaching the 10-year mark. I mean, we're about to close out our eighth year.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we're looking at a full cycle of the RPG industry, by my estimation, within the lifetime of this podcast. And we started this podcast, one of the things that used to drive us nuts as gamers was it was D20 everything.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who had MS Word was putting out a damn D20 product.
Yeah, and it wasn't just like fantasy. It's just like, oh, you want to play Shadowrun? Well, yeah. I've got D20 Shadowrun.
Yeah, and if you've got a game, they're going to do a D20 hack of it, whether it makes sense or not. Yeah. And, you know, I don't have a beef with the D20 system.
Sounds like you have a beef with the D20 system.
Son, I have a beef with cows.
So do I.
And nor do I have a huge problem with many of the products that were coming out.
Right.
I mean, there were some good products that came out in the D20 era. And hell, there were whole podcasts. I don't know if some of them are still around or not, but at least that were around that were dedicated to D20. But it just kind of became like, good God,
I remember
in
having
the world of ice cream, all we have is chocolate.
I remember having conversations with people in the industry, so to speak, where we kind of called them on it a little bit. It's like, can't you do something other than D20? And a lot of the arguments that came back were, well, why would we? Everyone knows how to play D20. It's what's out there.
Yeah, and
so why don't I write it in D20?
Sure,
it's just like, well, why don't you have an original goddamn thought in your head either?
Well, and I call,
because that didn't make him money at the time.
Yeah.
And I call BS on that because of the fact that, yes, there were principles of the D20 system where once you knew it, you could pretty quickly pick up a book.
Right.
And some books were more friendly than others in terms of having a ubiquitous rule system, you know, that you learn once and play everywhere. But some of these game systems marked up the D20 system so heavily that apart from the D20 being your primary deciding
die,
that was it. You had to learn so much. It wasn't just like, oh, it's D&D, but we've modified the rules just enough to make it work in space or sci-fi or something. No, I mean, it was marked up so heavily. It was such a massive rules hack that you really didn't feel like you were playing the same game anyway.
Yeah.
It was just kind of riding the coattails of this movement. And once again, I'm not saying good books or good rule systems or good whatever didn't come out of this, but it just got to be annoying because it was freaking D20 everything. That then busted. You know, that bubble finally burst. And now you don't have this huge glut of D20 products. And people have kind of gone back to really innovating again. And and there are some things that still survive. I mean, Pathfinder was a result of the D20 product. I mean, that's what it is. It's a D20 licensed product.
Yeah.
I don't know if they actually call it D20 because there are some special restrictions about the D20 label versus using that rule system. But, I mean, they still use the OGL. They're running off of what enabled the entire boom of D20 products. Yeah. They're one of the few things to really be going that strong outside of the D20 boom. But, yeah, I mean, right now we're definitely enjoying a boom. I mean, look at the attendance at Gen Con.
Oh, yeah.
You look at how, I mean, yeah, some of the game companies aren't doing so well. I mean, my thoughts are with all the people who, of course, within the past year got shaken out from White Wolf. That's obviously a pretty big hit to gaming as a whole. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry for that. Very sorry for that. But gaming as a whole seems to be doing very well right now, at least as far as a niche hobby market goes.
So the real point we're getting to, Dan, is when are you going to run this for us?
Dude,
Because I'm looking through this Hunter's Hunted book.
That's pretty cool.
I'm sold.
Yeah.
Dude, I'm sold on it too. And Hunter the Vigil, the newer one, is good as well. Or I might even grab Hunter's Hunted too. Dude, you name it. I would love to run that game. I have, to the best of my knowledge, never been able to run that game. I've actually played in it a few times, but I have never had an opportunity to run that game.
There's a biker gang who drive around the country killing vampires and drinking their blood.
Yeah.
They're ghouls. I want to be one of these in a game.
Like I said, Wayne, you just give me a week you want me to start. I would be happily run this game. I love this game. So anyways, thank you, Thunderbelly, for giving us a book and unintentionally giving us a whole topic there about the life cycle of the RPG market. All right, so I've actually got a couple topics outlined here, but it looks like after going on that tangent, we may only need one of them. We'll start with the one that Wayne gave me. And we'll see how it goes from there. I've got actually a listener request. If we don't do that one this week, we'll do it next week or the week after. All right. So, Wayne.
Yeah, this is one I actually want advice on here. So, I've noticed a trend in long-running campaigns or story arcs or whatever you do. If you're continuing to run the same characters, the characters themselves get more powerful. So, the villains they fight typically get more powerful. And you have this ultimate level of scope creep, where you may have started out wanting to do this intense drama between characters and all of this, and it becomes, well, now they save the world. What's the next big risk? Well, now they have to save the world even more.
Now they have to save the world in space.
I've reached the point now where I've had the scope creep, and I want to come back down. I want to explore a story with these characters where it's about internal politics and it's not dealing with something that is earth shattering. And I've noticed this problem on TV shows and movies as well, where it's just constantly upping the ante. And how do you top yourself?
Yeah, Wayne. So before we get into that, this actually gives me a, I don't know if it's a bone to pick with you or not, but so you're in Pathfinder Society, right?
I did it for a while. We haven't done it in a long time.
So I don't know a whole lot about the main Pathfinder setting, you know, Glarion or Glorian, however you pronounce it exactly. But I've been learning more about it.
Okay.
I did not know it is a fairly, I don't say it's a major part of canon, that it doesn't come up all the time, but it is a persistent part of the canon. It's always there in the background that the world is in a constant state of UFO visitation.
What? Like Spelljammer or like Area 57?
Like Area 51. Like,
or 51.
Yeah, like...
That's Heinz 57. Well,
yes. Like, was it the Barrier Peaks, Adventure to Barrier Peaks or whatever it's called? Yeah, that kind of thing.
It's like,
in fact, there's this rare metal in the game called Sky Metal. So I'm thinking it's like, oh, Elemental or something or Dragon Maid. No, it's alloys taken off of flying saucers.
It's like aluminum.
Yes.
Yeah, see, I haven't run into this in any of the Pathfinder Society scenarios I've done.
Somebody told me this. I thought they were joking. It actually took them quite a bit before I finally believed them, because I seriously thought they were yanking my chain. I seriously thought that. It took several minutes of discussion.
Aliens, they have computers and laser guns and spacesuits, and they land in fantasy world.
Yes. Wow. Or crash. Wow. But yes, that's like...
I'm very glad I haven't run into this in Pathfinder Society when I did it.
Because for anyone who's going to call BS on me, at least hit Google before you do, because I thought somebody was yanking my chain, and they actually had to prove it to me that, no, this really is a thing that's like a major...
Like a main major...
It's not major, just like, this is what it's about every time you play, but... I mean, it's not a dungeon or a dragon, okay?
It's not a path or a finder.
Right, exactly.
Well, and the big thing
it's always there, kind of in the background. It's not something that, we had this one adventure. It's something that kind of pops up again and again and again and again. It's kind of like the Star League in Battletech. It's really never there, but it's always a theme you can't get. I mean, everything that's going on, the existence of the clans, the structure of the Inner Sphere, it all kind of keeps going back to that.
Yeah, because Pathfinder Society, really the aspect that they're dealing with is politics.
Yes, I have it on at least moderate authority, not maybe good authority, but not bad authority either, that the adventures are going to start getting more and more into this. So just
fair. Aliens or politics?
Aliens.
Oh, okay.
They're already pretty far down the politics line.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I'm just putting that there. Okay, so anyways.
So what does that have to do with scope creep?
Well, because of the fact that
that's a pretty high scope creep.
Yeah, exactly. You save the world, and then you have to save it
in space.
In space, or you save the galaxy.
So,
here's my hypothesis on where it comes from. If you look at the tradition of computer RPGs, they draw pretty heavily from the basic, I don't know, modalities of D&D. And D&D, the way the game is written, you start off as a level one whatever, maybe even level zero, depending on what rules you're using, but a level one whatever. And you go out there and you get more powerful and you level up and you level up and you get more gear. And of course, as you level up, get more gear, the things you can take on become more powerful in order to challenge you. So when it starts off, you're saving the town from goblins. And then suddenly, instead of saving the town from goblins, you're saving the entire countryside from Umber Hulks coming up from the earth. And then you're fighting liches, and then you're fighting dragons. And then
you save the kingdom, and then you rule the kingdom.
Exactly.
And then you go into other planes.
And they had rules for all that. They had rules for having your own kingdom, for having your own followers, for having your own church. They had rules for traveling the planes, going elsewhere, dealing with even the gods themselves, because that was really the intended arc of the game, is it's about following your life as an adventurer. And of course, the question is, well, what keeps me coming back to adventure? Well, it's the fact that the adventures keep getting more intense and larger in scope. And I think that line of thinking subconsciously informed a lot of role-playing games and a lot of aspects of the hobby. Certainly this isn't present in every game. Or let's move this over to computer RPGs, which, once, as I said, I believe were informed by D&D. You can see it there, where you start off as a low-level whatever.
Hunting rats.
Yeah, hunting rats, because your dad asked you to keep them from eating stuff in the cellar. And then by the end of it,
Whoa, that's quite a lot of plot you're laying on there for early D&D.
Okay, fair enough.
Even if you look at, like...
actually was a plot line in Baldur's Gate, I believe. You start off, like, killing rats to clean out the cellar.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, you did. God. It wasn't for your dad, but
I was thinking Bard's Tale. I played some of those where you're doing that. But I was thinking, even if you look at something like City of Heroes, you never start off hunting rats, but you're doing street thugs.
Yeah.
And then you get more powerful, and then you're dealing with gangs, and then you're dealing with aliens, and then you're going to other realities. And
yeah.
Well, for me, it's not ever really a problem, because a lot of that is...
I've heard you complain about it sometimes, though. Well, you're running a game and you can't give, like, town guards aren't a challenge anymore.
Well, I don't care.
But you've complained about it.
See, here's the problem. It doesn't matter what you can and cannot kill. That's not really the thing that interests me. It's about what is the story? What are we dealing with? I mean, if you're, like, say you're in a fantasy world and you deal with all the different problems of the kingdom, and the kingdom is in this state of happiness, then what do you do as a GM? Well, you have an external threat come in. Okay, so they deal with the external threat, and that external threat's dealt with. Well, then what do you do after that? It's like, well, I could have an internal threat come in, but, you know, that's what they were dealing with in the first part of this, and then I had the external threat come in. Well, how about we have them go to the next kingdom over? Okay, so, well, now we're taking this to a sort of a regional game. It doesn't matter if how you're dealing with these problems is killing, 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 or politics, or talking, or role-playing. It doesn't matter. It's just the concept, right? So now you're talking about, like, a regional game. Well, now you're talking, after that, it's like, okay, well, internal threats from the... And it just keeps recursing, recursing, and recursing
scope
until
creep.
You are in space.
Yeah, and you're right. Scope creep does not have to involve violence.
Right.
You could have the exact same thing in a purely political game, social game, where... nobody's allowed to hurt anybody else. You can have the exact same problem.
It doesn't even have to be epic. Like, okay, so you're local, and then you're regional, and then you're countrywide, and then you're this and that, and then you're in space. It doesn't even have to be that. You could be playing a game like, say, Monster Hearts. How scope creep would work in a game like that, and I say Monster Hearts because it takes place in, like, a high school, right? And you don't leave the high school. You don't go to, like, the regional high school and then the country high school and then the space high school. You're in high school.
Unless you're on the football team, maybe you do.
Yeah, well, you can go to regionals then. But the thing in a game such as that, where you would have this kind of scope creep that you're talking about, is a sort of masturbatory scope creep of it's drama, and then there's more drama, and then here comes a principal drama, and it's just this churn of drama. And the game master kind of gets to a point to where, and I've had this happen before, it's like, am I really telling a story anymore? you have this sort of local plot, and it's like you can only deal with the football team and the baseball team and the chess club and the principal and the faculty and stuff. And while you're having a really good time, it's not so much that you're running out of ideas, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer was like this, the TV show. It kind of got to a point to where how many bad things can happen to a high school before somebody says, why are we even here anymore? You know, why don't we just
nuke the town
and start over 50 miles away? And, you know, because if you did that, though, you couldn't have the show anymore.
Yeah. Right.
And so you get that. But, you know, eventually they did come up with a good idea. They sent her to college, and that really expanded things. Sure. So I guess if the show went on for another 50 years, she would have ended up in space. But
well, OK, so what do we do to help this, though? Because what we're trying to get at is what Wayne was asking is, how do we pull this back?
Right.
How do we pull it back? I think we've well defined what's going on, and it makes sense, but do we have any advice on how do we bring this back?
Yes, but let me give one more thought, and actually this kind of ties some of it together. I think finding the solution, at least when I was rolling this topic around in my head, comes from identifying not what the problem is, but why the problem is. Why do people do this? You know, what need is there that scope creep is filling? Because once you identify that need, you can say, well, wait a minute, here's maybe another way to fill that need. Okay. So I already mentioned that it's a somewhat foundational trend within the role-playing hobby. Okay. It was there from the start. Now, I'm not saying it's there in every game, but it was there from the start. Let me put out one more premise, and then we'll start moving towards some kind of a solution here. My other observation about why I think this occurs is I think we as humans are wired that way. How do most people think of their career? Well, I want to start out at the low end. I mean, okay, maybe you don't want to, but you accept that. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
I'm going to start out as an intern. I want to move from an intern to an entry-level programmer. I want to go from that to a mid-level programmer, to an experienced programmer, to an architect or a manager or something like that. You have this sense of you want things to get bigger and better.
There's a reason they describe it as climbing the ladder, because you always want it to be going up.
Yes, absolutely. If you are playing a band, you know, you start off in your garage and then you get a bar gig or two. I mean, maybe you're happy with that, but I think it's normal for most people, at least somewhere in the back of their mind, to hope they land that arena or major contract with a big record label.
It's just about swimming and pussy. That's what that is. I mean, come on.
So I think that's part of what's going on as well, is people want to, in some way, feel like they're going somewhere. So as for solution, I would say, first off, if this is a campaign with a definitive end, I don't necessarily know if this is a problem, because of the fact that you don't have to get any bigger than the endpoint you had in mind. If you have in mind a campaign arc, and maybe this campaign arc will even go on for several years, but it's not open-ended. Once you save the kingdom from the evil wizard, it's done. If your players say they want more, too bad. There is no more other credits have rolled. You maybe get the problem of trying to follow up on this in your next campaign to make that one feel significant. Maybe you're even unintentionally training people that this is what makes campaigns significant. But it's not per se an issue. But let's say you have a more open-ended game. Or maybe you just don't want that kind of scope creep. So I started trying to think of forms of entertainment that I have enjoyed that didn't keep moving the scope. And what I found is they satisfied a different need psychologically than the need for upward progress.
Do you have examples? Because I'm trying to think of them, and sure, I'm not coming up with any.
Star Trek. That's probably the easiest one I can give you. I can give you more than this, but we'll start with that one. In Star Trek, you had episodes where the scope went up, episodes that involved the Borg or something like that. But speaking episode to episode, sometimes the scope actually went backward.
But see, the problem with that example, Dan, is you're already in f***ing space.
True.
In well, fact, they even went they to did, different parts of space, well, different dimensions of
they
space.
They did have scope creep where, they were talking about interdimensional beings or traveling time.
Yeah, different space
but
and different
the point
time
is,
frames.
They could still then roll it back and tell an interesting story that happens between two people on one ship, and it doesn't even involve weird psychic aliens and all
that. So here's
stuff.
The solution. The solution does not lie with the game master. The solution lies with the players. The players have to have good, well-rounded, interesting characters who are fully fleshed out. Because if you have adventurer, fighter, cleric All he wants to do is fight. And when he fights, he gains reward and he gains honor and prestige and he gains toys. And you have to keep getting better and better and better. You have to get better fights, better monsters, better prestige, better rewards. And you have this big stack and it's this growing mountain because that's all Phytor is. And if that ever stops, Phytor is not a well-rounded character. There is nothing else. There's nothing. He doesn't have hobbies. He doesn't have relationships. He doesn't have feelings or opinions or emotions. He has fighting. And that's all he does. So how players solve this is they have really good characters. Take a look at our Dresden game for a moment.
How players should solve
should,
this.
Should solve yeah. it. Take a look at our Dresden game. Our Dresden game that we've been playing for a couple of years now has been building. It's been building. It's been building. We have been dealing with greater and greater existential threats for a while now. We have been defending St. Louis from some of the biggest and baddest and worst that the Dresdenverse has to offer.
Yeah, and that's actually where I've got where the question starts with, because I've reached the point I don't want to go bigger.
So here's what you're going to do. You're going to reel it back, and you're going to eliminate the existential threats. And it's going to be okay, because our characters have interests outside of defeating the biggest and baddest things around.
Do you think sometimes the scope creep is just caused by, like, as I'm thinking about it, with all these well-done characters in various games I've played, does the scope creep sometimes just come in because the GM is trying to top himself?
Yes. I was going to go there next, because Chad was sitting here bitching about the players, saying it's all on the players. And I'm going to throw it right back and say it's not all on the players. It's on everybody. But it's also imperative for the GM to, from the get-go, not allow yourself to fall into the trap of scope creep. You play out one adventure that's a few sessions where we're like an episode like you're talking about, Dan, that is like the main storyline. But don't just go headlong into the next biggest thing after that. Have some side adventures. Mine your player characters for their hobbies or their interests, their well-roundedness. Focus on that. Find out what your ratio is. Maybe you do one big adventure and then you do two small ones before you do another main big adventure kind of a thing. But you've got to pace yourself. Because, yes, I think that's what's happening. It's like you just fall in the trap of, okay, I just did this and now I've got to top myself.
Well, here's why I'll agree with Chad.
Woohoo!
That I think.
Internet points.
I think the game master causes the problem, but I think the solution lies in the players. Let me explain the mechanism I see going on. All right, so going back to why scope creep occurs, okay, so these psychological needs. When a game master looks at a game, you're entertaining other people. Now, they should be part of that entertainment, entertaining you in return, but you are the first actor within that set of entertainment. And so the game master puts upon themselves a certain amount of pressure that they want to tell a good story. They want people to walk away and say, wow, I really enjoyed that game. And so you start thinking, well, how do I make the players care? Well, here's the thing. I can't make you care about your character.
Right.
I can't make you care about anyone else's character. I can't even make you guys have characters that are worth caring about.
The largest plot to the smallest plot does not impact how much a player cares about what's going on in the game.
Exactly. And what I can do as a GM and should do is make a setting and a plot that are worth caring about. Yeah. But I think game masters feel a sort of pressure to make the players care. And I think too often the game master feels that way, rightly so, because the players won't at least make a good faith attempt to get invested. And so the game master says, wait a minute, I can't make you care about the setting. I can't make you love or hate an NPC. Once again, I can make them lovable or hateable, but I can't make you love or hate them. But what I can do is threaten you. Well, the thing is, if I threaten and you conquer that threat, it's not so threatening anymore. Even if you didn't get powerful, and usually in role-playing games you did by conquering a threat, but even if you didn't get more powerful, I still have to throw a bigger threat at you to scare you.
Yeah.
I mean, you can only be scared by the same thing so many times.
I mean, in the last game, Wayne had to threaten me so bad, he killed my character at the end of the game.
Wayne kills players, dude.
I know, right? I thought I got off lucky.
Yeah.
Actually, it was really cool. Wayne, I won't get into a gaming story, but Wayne passes me a note, and he's like, hey, do you mind if I do something drastic to your character? And I'm like, yeah, let's do it. And then it's just like, we did this. My character was killed. I mean, it may be a comic book death. He may come back with longer hair. We don't know. But, it was jaw-dropping, the entire table, because it was like, we win! We win! Yay, we're so awesome! And then Chad's character dies, was murdered.
Was it the troll or Coyote?
The troll was murdered. And everyone's like, oh, shit. And Wayne's like, all right, that's the end of the game. And not the end of that evening's game.
No, that's the end of the arc.
Yeah. We're not going to pick this up for a long time.
Right.
And so what's cool is that it was a big, gigantic mountain of an adventure, right? I mean, it dealt with the queens of Summer Court and Winter Court and immortals and outer beings and stuff. I mean, we're talking pretty heavy duty stuff within Dresdenverse. The thing is that the next arc, when we pick it up, all the characters are very good. They're very, very well written. It sounds silly. I'm really proud of everyone at the table, because everyone at the table has done an excellent job at just fleshing out, making truly awesome characters. When you have that, you're very lucky, Wayne, because when you have players who do that for you as a GM, you don't even need much of a story.
Yeah. No.
Because they make their own story. Yep. You could do a months-long campaign about some crazy shit happening at a bar.
Uh-huh.
And we would be all in.
Yeah. Chad, I think back to that game that you and I played with Paul and Tim, where the characters were very deep. And there were sessions where, yes, we had big stuff going on. The game master's running a very plot-heavy game. But there were other games we played where, I mean, literally from start to finish, it was nothing but character-to-character role-play.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, therefore, it is entirely on the players. Because as I said before, I think it is incumbent upon the GM to make a world that's worth being invested in.
Yes.
But to make something work, look at what the Game Master's capable of. They can't make you care about something other than numbers. Numbers are obvious. I can give you a +1 and then a +2 and then a +3. I can make the numbers go up. Mm-hmm. That's easy. The Game Master, as the arbiter of rules and the controller of all NPCs, including the things that fight you, can absolutely make the numbers go up. They can math. They can math the shit out of a game. But that's really the only thing they have complete control over.
Yeah.
You know, if you want this to be, so let's go back to things that you can care about. You know, if you've watched ongoing, let's say, character dramas on TV, where maybe there's even a single thread plotline going, why do people keep coming back to these? Is there scope creep? A lot of times, no. It's because of the fact that people start to care about the characters that are involved. It's because of the fact that people become invested in the universe. They want to know what happens to these people. They want to learn more. Mm-hmm. They don't want to go bigger. They want to go deeper.
Yeah.
And that's a very different kind of growth, but I don't know there's a whole lot the GM can do to create that. I mean, they can certainly enable it. They can give you fallow fields for it.
They can facilitate it, or they can get in the way of it and kill it.
That, too. They could certainly get in the way of it.
I mean, is that why you killed my troll?
No.
Did he get in the way of your plot?
Yes. I've never said he's dead. I just stabbed him in the back and kicked him off a bridge.
Yeah, with an iron knife.
He could be growing longer hair as he falls.
I know, right? He's a troll. He does that.
To be fair, Wayne had just read the Death of Wolverine comic, so...
Oh, crap.
Your death was much better than the Death of Wolverine.
Excellent.
And a biography of Virginia Woolf, but he only skim read it. Something, something went into water dead. I mean, so the details are a little bit off, but you know, hey. That went dark? Anyway.
Yeah.
So, Wayne, I don't know if that exactly answers your question.
It gives me a lot to think about.
But I think as a game master, at least what you can do is two things.
Bring cookies.
Preferably pot cookies.
No, I show up and cookies are baked for me.
Damn.
That's how it works.
You've arrived as a game master. See, you haven't really arrived until the players write your plot, run your game, do the mechanics for you, and drive you to the game.
That has not happened yet.
And bake you cookies. Yeah. See, that took a lot of years for me to get to there.
So I think you can certainly, as a game master, say, okay, here's what I need to do to enable it. Here's the kinds of things that I'm going to put my energy into. I'm not going to put my energy specifically and first and foremost into the numbers, the combat, the loot. I'm going to instead look at ways to make this world deep. I'm going to make sure the NPCs have interesting motivations and interconnected backstories. Yeah, I'm going to put my effort in the things that I want to see shine. Because look, if you don't make any attempt to develop it, I don't think it's fair to expect the players to put an effort where you wouldn't. I think the second thing you can do is talk to the players about it. Say, guys, you know, look, these are the kinds of things I want out of the game. Now, don't try to social engineer because it doesn't work. You can't say, okay, everyone be invested. You know, everyone hate this NPC. I mean, come on, it's nonsense. But you certainly can say to them, guys, okay, look, as a game master, I can bring you the plot. I need you to bring what you're responsible for. You're responsible for one character. Bring me that one character. You guys can create a group template that includes you guys having relationships with each other that might be investments or strain or love or whatever. I need you to bring that. And I need you at the table to actually play that. Good God, there is nothing I hate more than as a GM. I describe a big scene and all this action, all these things and plot hooks and potential things players can grab onto. What do you guys do? If even you get that noise, you like look around the table and everyone's avoiding your gaze like you're the goddamn Medusa. And it's like,
can I roll notice? Can I roll investigate?
Yeah, no. Can you freaking?
I disbelieve the illusion.
Chad, you've GM'd a lot of. I know you've had this happen to you. Wayne, I don't know if you've had this happen to you. I'm hoping your current group of players is better than this. Maybe it has happened to you. Good God, it sucks. It sucks even worse at a con game because you're like, wow, I have one chance at bat, and this is what I'm swinging.
The thing I hate the most when I run is I do the big scene, I do the big description, and I look up, and I see the tops of people's heads. Every single player, I do not see their eyes. I see the tops of their heads because they're on their goddamn phones.
Or even frustrating, even if they're on their character sheets.
Yeah.
I won't even, you know.
Bartender's in front of you, and he wants to have a merry conversation. Character sheet. What kind of diplomacy skills do I have? Like, no, just say something.
Yeah. And you know what? Players, to any players listening right now, let me give you some advice that I have recently gotten better with myself than the past, let's say, 5 years of my GMing or playing career, rather. But historically have not.
Well, in the past 2 days, you've gotten better. You got Hunter's Hunted from Thunderbelly.
I did. Thunderbelly, steady pimping. But
I don't even know what that means, but I like it.
Yeah, you do.
If you're bored in your game, do something.
Yeah.
And I don't mean you have to be disruptive. I'm not saying you have to be a complete jackass. Good God, play your character. Ask some questions. Mm-hmm. Create some action. You will very rarely, unless you're just a complete out of control douche, you're not going to bother your GM. Most GMs are hungry for this. I was really sweating bullets at Fear the Con 7 because I was around that Intro to RPGs game. And when I first started off that game, it was just real quiet.
Yeah. Ooh.
But fortunately, didn't take very long before I had two or three players step in and they got real proactive and they got real crazy with their characters and they went in all kinds of directions I didn't expect. And you know what? It was the best thing that could have happened. Mm-hmm. It saved that game because of the fact that all I can do is set the field. I can't make motion. You have to do that. The only power I have is the power to threaten you.
Whenever I run a game at a con, because I run games that are very player driven, and I usually run the games that I wrote, which are extremely player focused. I tell the people straight up before the game even starts, I'm like, listen, you guys, this game is designed for the players to be proactive. You do things, you take the bull by the horns, and you start running. If you all just sit here, I'm just going to sit here and stare at you, and it's going to be a staring contest.
Yeah, so, awesome.
You know? And you know what? I've never had a problem. I think as long as you're upfront about it, because even in the descriptions of the games that I post, I at least mention something like that. And people show up, and they want to run. They want to go.
Something I have only tried now, twice in my life, both at the same convention, but really seemed to help.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is done so much anymore, but you know the old kind of pop psych technique of if you can't get someone to say something as themselves, hand them puppets or stuffed animals. And, you know what I'm talking about? Okay, yeah. You've probably seen this satirized or something somewhere. The Lion King game. When you hand people a stuffed animal that is their character, and the very first thing you ask them to do is one, sing, and two, I made everyone at the table make their animal dance. And suddenly, you're not acting stupid. Your stuffed animal's acting stupid.
Right.
That one step of separation. Now, there were some people at that game where they didn't need that. They would have acted great. I was going to say the fool, but that's what I needed.
Yeah.
They would have acted wonderfully regardless of that. But there was a couple of people where I think they did benefit from having that one degree of separation. But when I guess to kind of put a bow on my view of this, what I came up with.
Get your players puppets.
Get your players puppets. No, it happens because of the fact that the players are expecting a scope creep. And because of the fact that Game Masters feels the best way to make their plot obviously meaningful and engaging. And I believe the best solution is in the Game Master still doing what they can, but putting their work into things that don't involve scope creep. Once again, things that go deeper or maybe even go outward, but are not directed at going upward. You know, you can even, if you're getting bored with the scenery, you can move a game from place to place and it's still a local game. It's just now it's a local game in this city instead of that city. But don't rely on that as what's going to captivate your players. And this is where it has to come back to the players, is they have to be prepared to grab at that, to bite at that, to go for something that motivates them beyond a plus two sword to replace their plus one sword.
So this gives me a lot to think about. I think I know how I want to approach him when I am ready to come back for the next arc.
Kill Chad's other character?
I do have a couple. So, Wayne, should I make a third character for the next arc?
We actually need to discuss that.
I think what Wayne's going to have to do is map out every bridge in the St. Louis area. And each one of them, I'm assuming you killed him on the Eads Bridge, because that's what Troll is bound to.
Yes.
Okay, so you've got the Jefferson Barracks Bridge, you've got, you know...
MLK.
MLK.
You know, we defined...
You've got the new one.
We defined the troll on MLK.
Did you?
Yeah, because part of my backstory was...
Is this
was,
something I'm going to have to edit out of the show?
No.
Okay, go
no.
on.
Part of my backstory was my character went over to MLK to talk to that bridge troll to say, what do you do as a bridge troll? Because my character does not understand what his job is. No one has ever explained it to him. You're a bridge troll. Be a bridge troll. What does that even mean?
Yeah.
And no, the guy was just like, I'm a bridge troll. You know, he's kind of like Groot. You know, it's just like, what do I do? What do you do all day? Well, I just kind of sit here and I be a bridge troll. What does that entail? Tails being a bridge troll.
I didn't, so he's like never heard the story of like Billy Goat's Gruff or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe he tried that. Maybe you go up and try to exact a toll from
an 18-wheeler. Yeah. You know.
An 18-wheeler going 70.
Yeah.
That's just going to be a splattered troll.
Yeah. Well, he has gone up to the top before and like here's a car coming and he stands in the middle of the road as a human. And then his car gets closer. He trolls out. And in front of a normal human, not in traffic, but late at night. And the guy's like, slams on his brake, gets out of the car, goes running. And then he turns into a human, gets in the car and drives away. So, he needs a car. He needs to get across town, man. He doesn't own a car.
So the bridge, it's a strangely...
The bridge doesn't let him own a car.
So within this context...
Yes.
It's a pacifist Grand Theft Auto. It's like Grand Theft Auto where nobody gets hurt.
Right, right. You know, he's killed people before, but only bad guys.
Right. Oh, of course. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah, only people that he has determined they're bad.
It's like when you're playing one of the Lego games. Lego Marvel, you can get in any car you want, and they just get out and say, oh, take my car.
It's very kind of them. Yeah. Okay, I get it. Yeah.
So well, listen, if an 8-foot-tall giant green troll with poisonous claws appears in front of you and you're unarmed, I mean,
I'm in a car. I mean, look, you got to remember, I've got that whole thing. I want a cryptid's head on my wall, right?
Yeah.
So, look.
Well, he's driven a couple of cars that were a little smashed up in the front.
Yeah.
For just so
I'm
reasons.
Just saying, it's look. Just,
he's the immovable object.
Yeah, I'd take the hit quite literally.
Yeah.
Anyway, Wayne, I hope this bit of some help to you. And as always, I invite the people listening to come get involved in the forum discussion. Give Wayne your ideas. Give each other your ideas. As always, check the show notes. We should have a couple links out there, certainly to our fundraiser for this Christmas. Go out there and give
the one that we will win, and we will crush our opponents with our charity.
We will crush our opponent, which is heart disease, which is actually kind of what heart disease is. So
worthy of being crushed.
I know, which you like crush a heart or a blood vessel. It kind of is kinda, heart disease.
Yeah. And to do that with like your hand, I mean, heart is really strong muscle.
It is. Yes, it is. I've never tried to clamp a beating heart before, but. That's really sick. Okay, so thank you guys for tuning in. And
I've eaten a heart before.
I've eaten a chicken heart.
Chicken heart, yeah.
Okay, we will catch the rest of you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.